I realized there had to be another way out of that. A new holiday was born. A Festivus for the rest of us.
This new holiday of yours is scratching me right where I itch.
Let's do it then.
All right.
Festivus is back!
Ladies and gentlemen, we know of America!
The world is, it's got its trouble points about ufology, one of them being that the nasty, noisy negativists are really beating on it, not with facts, but with fiction. There are a lot of con men out there. A lot of people can lie very convincingly. Mm-hmm. Any woman will tell you that. Interesting sevens. I'm 77 this year, and this is your seventh show. That tells you something. I don't know what.
Yeah, I'm not sure what yet, but we'll have to find out.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's the Banal of America Audio Holiday Special featuring Stanton Friedman.
Happy holidays!
With your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with the 7th annual BOA Audio Holiday Special. That's right, folks. It is time once again for the Yuletide tradition like no other. Our annual celebration of the holidays featuring the iconic father of modern-day ufology, Stanton Friedman. I hope all of the amazing BOA Audio listeners out there are having a fantastic holiday season. Personally, I am thrilled that this tradition has reached its 7th year. I am just stunned at the longevity of this holiday special and how it just keeps getting bigger and bigger every year. And this year, my friends, is no exception. It is a jam-packed conversation covering just a myriad of topics. Let me give you the rundown. We're going to get an update from Stan on his travels of the past year. He's been to Saudi Arabia, Poland, Brazil, and all over the United States as well. He's going to talk about those experiences. Beyond that, he's going to give his take on the recent spate of disclosure petitions circulating within ufology over the last few months. He will respond to the Skeptical Inquirer's recent debunking of the Exeter case, and we'll get his take on one topic we've been talking about on the program for quite some time, the apparent malaise that has afflicted ufology in recent years, and he'll also touch on the ignorance of academia when it comes to the UFO phenomenon. Then, of course, we turn the program over to the BOA Audio listeners for our traditional Ask Stanton Friedman mailbag. And this year, we feature a whopping 23 questions from BOA Audio listeners that cover such diverse topics as the world economic crisis, the Bentwaters incident, the Fukushima meltdown, ball lightning, the Betty and Barney Hill case, and the Higgs boson particle. And that's just scratching the surface of the BOA Audio listener questions. Of course, we cover tons and tons more. Altogether, it is one of the most anticipated and beloved episodes of the year as we once again welcome the father of modern-day ufology, Stanton Friedman, and celebrate the holiday season in style. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Stanton Friedman, please crawl out from the cave in which you live and let me give you the bio on ufology's great one. Stanton Friedman received BS and MS degrees in physics from the University of Chicago in 1955 and 1956. He was employed for 14 years as a nuclear physicist for such companies as GE, GM, Westinghouse, TRW Systems, Aerojet General Nucleonics, and McDonnell Douglas on such advanced, classified, and eventually canceled projects as nuclear aircraft, fission and fusion rockets, and nuclear power plants for space. He has provided written testimony to congressional hearings, appeared twice at the United Nations, and has been a pioneer in many aspects of ufology, including Roswell, Majestic 12, The Betty Hill Marjorie Fish Star Map Work, Crashed Saucers, Flying Saucer Technologies, and Challenges to the SETI, Silly Effort to Investigate Cultists. He is the author of the books Top Secret Magic and Crash at Corona, the Definitive Study of the Roswell Incident, and his magnum opus, Flying Saucers and Science. Additionally, he is the co-author, along with Kathleen Martin, of two books, Captured, about the Betty and Barney Hill abduction case, and Science Was Wrong. His website is www.stantonfriedman.com, and let me spell that one for you, folks. STANTONFRIEDMAN.com. StantonFriedman.com. Check it out. And with all that said, pour yourself a glass of eggnog, my friends. Grab a handful of gingerbread cookies, because it's time to rock and roll. This interview was recorded on December 12th, 2011. It's the 7th annual BOA Audio Holidays Special, featuring Stanton Friedman. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 7th annual BOA Audio Holidays Special, featuring, of course, the father of modern-day ufology, Stanton Friedman. Every year I just heap platitudes onto this guy, and you've sent us so many questions for him that I'm going to try and keep everything short this year. He's the author of Crash at Corona, also Top Secret Magic, as well as Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience, and Flying Saucers and Science, as well as Science Was Wrong. And this year he was a contributor to the new book, UFOs and Aliens. So he's been extremely active, traveled all over the world this year. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff. I love this special so much. It really brightens my whole holiday season when I talk to Stan and know we're going to do it and have it in the can afterwards and just know that it's going out to all, so many folks, and so many people look forward to it and email me all year long about it. So it's a thrill, and it's just stunning that we've made it 7 years here with this tradition, and Stan's been such a huge part of it. And, you know, it's time to do it once again. Welcome back to the show, Stan. Happy holidays.
Glad to be on again, and interesting sevens. I'm 77 this year, and this is your seventh show. That tells you something. I don't know what.
Yeah, I'm not sure what yet, but we'll have to find out. So, yeah, as I said, an exciting year for you. You traveled all over the place.
I was a little incredulous looking back. There I was in Saudi Arabia, in Warsaw, Poland, in Sao Paulo, Brazil, in St. John's, Newfoundland, and I think it was 8 or 10 different states. Who knew? You know, I haven't been to Saudi Arabia before, so that was quite a treat. So it's just an indication that there's worldwide interest in the subject.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's growing every year, it seems. Seems a lot of these other countries are developing quite an interest. Not that they hadn't before, but it seems more vocal or something. I'm not sure exactly what it is.
Yeah, I think they're opening up a bit, and it really took guts for the guys in Saudi Arabia. I mean, that was the 5th annual Global Competitiveness Forum. If you wanted to attend, it cost you $4,000. It's kind of an elite group of people, as you can imagine, you know, the chief test pilot for Boeing and head of Google and all this sort of stuff. And so that was intriguing that they would have a session on contact with outer space, a panel of five, and there was no competing session at the same time. And they had Michio Kaku and Jacques Vallée, who you don't see very often at these things, and guy from England, Nick Pope, and myself, and an Arab scholar. And we had 75 minutes of the time of these fancy people. And contact with outer space. My thrust, incidentally, and something that's part and parcel of this whole subject, was that we need innovation. And Friedman's mantra is that technological progress comes from doing things differently in an unpredictable way. And so if you want to find new ideas for how to solve old problems, look to the people who have already done so. And the aliens coming here have obviously solved a few problems a little more effectively than we have, since we haven't gone out there very far. So, you know, and I showed slides of a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, and awed them by pointing out that it can operate for 18 years without refueling. Try that with a gas-powered engine.
Well, what was the reaction of these? Because I take it then,
I wouldn't go so far maybe to say they were power brokers, but certainly there were people, you know, an echelon above my pay scale, let's say.
Well, at one lunch, I asked a guy, they're investment people, and how much money do you guys handle? About $150
billion. Oh, wow. You
know, a little out of my price range.
I hope they paid for lunch then.
No, that was part of the package.
Oh, God.
But, you know, so the speaker at the first one of these five that have been held so far, and there's another one coming up in January, was Bill Gates.
Oh, wow.
And the keynote speaker last year was Bill Clinton. So we're not talking about, you know, little guys off in a corner here. And people were saying to me, why the heck would Saudi Arabia, which is soaking in oil, have a global competitiveness forum? What do they care? Well, right after I got back was the big fuss in Egypt. And it's clear in the Arab world that birth rates are high, poverty is great, there's not enough investment in businesses to make jobs for people. They need to do something to keep the natives from getting too restless, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
As you saw what happened in Egypt and Libya, and there are still things going on in Syria and other places. And so I was pleased to see that women were getting seemingly a fair shake, which is unheard of in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There were women participants. They were non-discriminatory. I asked before I went, I sent them a note saying, people are wondering if I'm crazy for going there. I mean, you're Jewish, Dan. Have you forgotten? You know. No. So I sent him a little note saying, you know, is there a problem? I don't want to go all that long way and have somebody saying, you can't come in the door.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got a note back saying, no, there's no problem. We've had many Jewish participants, and there was no problem. And people forget Arabs and Jews are both Semites. And it could have been, looking around the room, it could have been a cousin's club from my father, because he could have passed if he was there as an Arab. And it was very interesting that guys at this level are taking a subject like this seriously.
Yeah.
And so you have to respect that. Now, Warsaw, Poland, I'd been to Poland before, but I was brought in by the Polish UFO Society, and they wanted to know what I felt about Warsaw, and it had changed. When I was there, the Russians were in charge, and it was a drab, blah place. And we were at a shopping mall. They took me out, and we went to other places, and it's modernized. It's going on, and there was a good crowd. And no, I don't speak Polish. They had an interpreter there. But, there were people asking questions and stuff. So that was interesting. I've been to Brazil before, and I knew about their interest. Good crowds, a variety of people. You know, you just sense that the rest of the world is kind of wanting to get involved in this subject.
Yeah.
And I found a new wrinkle twice this past year. I spoke at paranormal conferences at casinos.
Oh, nice. So you got the casino circuit on the horizon then.
Well, it would be nice. I mean, all they want to do is bring people in to spend money gambling, of course.
Yeah.
But it's a nice place, and the hotel's part of the casino. You know, you don't have to go very far, and quite an attraction. So I was intrigued by that, a whole new approach. And I don't mean mind being part of the paranormal crew, if you will. You know, so that was interesting. And then, of course, there was MUFON and Roswell. And, oh, I don't need to tell you that New Hampshire had several events.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to three drastically different events in New Hampshire this past year. One was the second annual Exeter UFO conference. And we'll have to talk about a new explanation for the incident at Exeter, off the wall explanation, but we'll get to that. The second was the 50th anniversary celebration of the Betty and Barney Hill case.
Mm-hmm.
At Indian Head, and Kathleen Martin and I both spoke, and they've already announced there was such good interest that they're having a second 50th anniversary, if you will, this coming September at the Indian Head Resort. And again, it's an indicator that they were full of capacity, And so people are interested. We were on a bus, went around to where the events took place, you know, and all that stuff.
Oh, nice, nice, nice. I might have to check it out next year, yeah.
You know, and the third thing I did was quite different. Krista McAuliffe and Alan Shepard, Discovery Center. Remember Krista? She was the school teacher on Challenger?
Yep.
And so they brought me in, and I talked. They have kids coming to these places, of course.
Yeah. You know,
the school bus tours, so to speak. And so I talked to a bunch of third graders, close, and fifth graders. And that was kind of interesting, too, as well as an evening program that night. So,
nice.
And, you know, it's not they have any money, but at least they cover my expenses. And I look upon her as a hero. Krista McAuliffe, and certainly Alan Shepard, our first man, one of the first in space. And so I think we need to do homage to these people, and the kids need role models. And people like these are good role models. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's been, now in contrast, for example, there was a MUFON group in Pittsburgh, and we had 2 days. One was UFOs and one was Bigfoot. And great crowds, hundreds of people each day, and they were wanting books signed and all this kind of stuff. And it was a going home week. I did a program on KDKA Pittsburgh. You know, in a big old station. Well, it was because of them that I gave my first lecture and my first radio appearance about UFOs and stuff. So it was going home week. I lived in Pittsburgh for 3 years, and this dates back to the late 60s, you understand.
Mm-hmm,
but I've been around a long time. So,
oh, yeah, I'm well aware of the Stan Friedman mythos.
Yeah, it's been a hectic year, and people say, when are you retiring, Stan? And I say, why should I retire? I like my boss. I like what I'm doing. what would I do as long as I'm healthy and can do what I've been doing? Traveling does get rugged sometimes. You know, let's have at it. And as long as people come out, why should I stop?
Exactly, yeah. Now, when we were setting up this interview, and even just now when I got you on the phone to get going here, you had a lot of opinions on this White House petition story that's been going around. So let's hear what your take is on this.
Well, okay. I didn't sign the first one, the PRG, Steve Bassett's, because I thought it was badly worded, and because I disagree with the fundamental notion that everything should be declassified. I worked under security for 14 years. There's a darn good reason for security, to protect national interests. And I really don't think we should be putting out anything we've learned from, call it back engineering if you want, of UFOs, unless the Russians, the Chinese, and everybody else is putting out what they have.
Yeah, exactly. Now, is this the PRG one? Is that the one that got a response on the
what?
Okay. Just so make sure.
Now, I also did a column. I do a monthly column for the MUFON Journal, and I won't say monthly, but occasional column for UFO Magazine. It doesn't come out every month. and pointing out the problems with the White House response, even though I didn't like the petition, but the guy who wrote the response, the Office of Scientific Policy, something like that, said they're not hiding any, no information is being hidden from the public. Now, that is an absolute lie. Unless you can read what's under, for example, 156 top secret Umbra National Security Agency UFO documents, all preceding 1980, mind you, and you can read one line, one sentence per page. The rest is being hidden. You know, I don't care how you slice it.
Yeah, exactly.
The CIA, there are some top secret Umbra documents. Some took me 5 years to get. Now, they're blacked out. The NSA stuff is whited out. But and there are a number of pages where there are 8 words you can read, nothing very exciting. And my favorite was a CIA top secret Umbra UFO document that says, deny in toto up at the top. Everything else.
But they're not hiding anything. They're not hiding anything.
No, they're not hiding anything. Also, we have the statement from General Bolander, Carol Bolander. He wrote the memo that resulted in the closure of Project Blue Book in 1969. The Condon Committee had recommended that it be closed because they didn't think it was contributing anything to science or intelligence. And and that's one of the few things I agree with the Condon Committee. So here's General Bolander, who had been working on a lunar excursion module, had nothing to do with Blue Book, completely an outsider, if you will. But once we landed on the moon, which was in July of that year, now he didn't have to work 12-hour days, as he told me when I found him 10 years later. And in this memo, he said, reports of UFOs which could affect national security are made in accordance with JNAP 146 and Air Force Manual 55-11 and are not part of the Blue Book system. Those are being withheld. We haven't seen them, so that's part of the lie.
Yeah.
He also said that if we close Project Blue Book, the public won't have a place to report sightings. However, as previously noted, reports which could affect national security will continue to be investigated using regulations established for that purpose. And, of course, we keep getting told every year that, oh, we don't have any interest in UFOs. The Air Force isn't doing anything. But, as you know, the Black Vault has carried materials, regulations for pilots, what they should do if they see an unidentified surface ship, an unidentified submarine, an unidentified rocket, an unidentified airplane, or an unidentified flying object. The regulations are on the book for our most modern fighters, pilots of those. Now, when Lee Spiegel, who's an old-timer in the field, he set up the congressional hearings, not congressional hearings, the United Nations hearings UFOs. And that was back in the 70s, you understand.
Mm-hmm.
And so Lee is writing for Huffington Post, the weird desk. It used to be AOL, but Huffington bought them out. And so he got copies of those regulations for pilots and filed a few requests under Freedom of Information, and all of a sudden those were removed. So they responded all right. They got rid of everything. So to say that there's nothing being hidden, is a flat-out lie as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And so I wrote a column about that. Now, as you know, there's a second wave coming on. Bryce Zabel and Richard Dolan have combined, and I'm backing them up, if you will, on a new petition. And it's interesting. Originally, it took only 5,000 signatures to have the petition to be considered by the Office of Science Policy. Now it takes 25,000.
Oh, wow.
Hey, we made it too easy. We've got to make it tough for these guys, So the new one asks that there be a special agency set up to consider sightings by pilots and astronauts and people like that.
Right.
And also to have access to classified stuff. And so I've signed that one. I mean, we know they have certain things. Let's ask for them. If they don't want to release them, don't tell me you don't have it because you said you had it.
Exactly, yeah. Trip them up at their own game, in a sense.
Yeah, whether anything will come of this, I don't know. And if you go to White House petition someplace on the Internet, you'll find these Bryce Zabel, Richard Dolan.
Yeah, probably afterdisclosure.com. I bet they have it at their website. So.
Something like that. Yeah. That would be it. And so it'll be interesting. It's not that I expect much to come out of this. I mean, people say, why are they still lying? When I was a particular case where the Air Force was lying, I said, look, there's one good reason for lying. It works. there's the New York Times still defending the ain't nothing to it attitude. And so if you convince them, what difference does it make whether most people think you're lying? It doesn't at all. They're protected.
Exactly, yeah. It's
it's a game people play, but if we could find the Woodward and Bernstein of the UFO scene, that's what we need. All the president's men and then some.
Indeed. Yeah. Well, I don't know if you're familiar with the new book, UFOs in Wartime. It's by Mac Maloney. I just interviewed him for the show, and it's just...
No.
Oh, it's a pretty good book. You should check it out. Yeah, Mac Maloney. He's a fiction writer who writes like war Tom Clancy style books, and then he got interested in UFOs and decided to write this book. So
is it fiction or nonfiction?
No, it's nonfiction. It's a legit UFO book. He does come out and say he doesn't believe in Roswell, so it might be worth checking out for that whole thing. So
that's a popular mythology that there's nothing to Roswell.
Yeah.
Harlan Andrews says that in his latest column in UFO Magazine when it finally came out. And it's kind of, you know, there's truth by repetition. Everybody knows MJ-12 is phony, Stan. I don't.
Exactly, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, they're asking the wrong question. Are there lots of phony MJ-12 documents? Of course there are. And I expose a number of them in my book, Top Secret Magic. But wouldn't you expect there to be phony baloney stuff out there to sort of cover the trail, if you will? And I can never get any of these guys, Roswell, Arlen Andrews, in one thing he said, hey, how could there be an alien's craft when all there was a car trunk full of material? That's utter nonsense. Sure, coming back from the crash site, Major Marcel put stuff in his trunk. That's all there was room for goodness sakes. If that's all there had been, it's very simple. If that's all there had been, then the rancher, Mac Brazel, would have brought it into the sheriff's office and said, hi, you know, give me my reward or whatever.
Yeah.
No problem. But why would Jesse Marcel and Captain Cavett have gone all the way back following him out in the hinterland in New Mexico to the crash site? Because there was a ton of this stuff out there.
Yeah.
And, of course, all he could bring was what he could fit in the car, but they went out later. The military went out, cleaned up the debris field. The notion that that's all there was is absurd. And, you know, yes, there have been people telling phony stories about any subject you can name. You can find some.
That's the truth. Well, what I was going to say is, you know, the book does a great job sort of just looking back on all the big sort of UFO events of the last 100 years, as far as like the military's concerned, and also like the ghost rockets and the ghost ship stuff of Scandinavia before World War One and Two, or around that area. You know, having read the book, I found it almost maddening in a sense that you know, this has been going on for so long, and we have so many witnesses and so much information, and it's just like, it just hasn't really. I find myself like in this malaise almost of around the subject, where it's just maddening that we haven't gotten any further on this. I mean, how do you deal, I guess, with that whole aspect of it?
Well, I do point out to people that the sightings didn't stop. MUFON for the last 6 months has gone over 600 sightings a month, I think. And people say, well, I didn't know that. No, most of them don't get any publicity. Of course not. That doesn't mean they didn't happen.
Right, right. But it's like, how many more sightings? I don't know. I just feel like we're at a some kind of like joint point or something like that. You know.
Well, yeah, I know what you're getting at, and what I try to tell people is that we need a breakthrough. Okay, but we need the public. Well, I know what's going to happen. Two movies, he says. Hopefully, one is Top Secret Magic being made with Don Schmidt's book. Witness to Roswell.
Yes, it's Magic Man, right?
Yeah, Magic Man. And if that gets made as powerfully as it can be, and Bryce Abel has had some good opinions from very important figures in Hollywood, and I'm hoping to see him at the end of the month. I'll be in California, family stuff, but I think Bryce and I will be able to get together to see the screenplay. And so that would be one, and it looks like we're about to sign with the same people, Stellar Productions, Bryce Abel, Donnie Most, et cetera, on a movie of Captured, Betty and Barney Hill UFO experience. And if we get two powerful movies, now, admittedly, I hate to say this, but more people watch movies than read books.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
You may have noticed that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so a couple of powerful movies might have some real benefit. On the other hand, we're still fighting a battle with the powers of ignorance disguised in PhD degrees. This year, I had a call many months ago from an editor of the University of Chicago magazine. I have a bachelor's and master's degrees in physics from the University of Chicago back in the mid-50s. Mm-hmm. So suddenly I get a call. She'd like to do a profile on me. Oh, really? So she came up, this editor spent 4 days here and did a lot of checking around hither, thither, and yon. I spent a lot of time with her. And they came out with a very friendly article, lots of pictures and stuff, in like October, the October-November or September-October issue. Mm-hmm. And it was very, I was surprised, frankly. I was a little worried, but what the heck. There weren't any nasty hints of, you know, idiocy or anything like that.
Yeah.
Okay, then the next issue, they carry several letters.
Uh-oh.
from alumni, because this goes to over 100,000 alumni.
Yeah.
And I still think the University of Chicago is one of the top 10 universities in the country, and, you know, lots of Nobel Prize winners and stuff like that. Not me, but there is a Friedman who got one who was connected with them, too, as a matter of fact.
Oh, nice, nice.
Anyway, here are these well-educated people, because I could look them up in the directory, saying really stupid things. One of them saying that all you have are lights in the sky that people can't identify. If they were really coming here, they'd show up on radar.
And oh, that's so ignorant. Things,
as if there haven't been
yeah.
any radar signs.
Oh, my God.
And there's another guy. She quotes me as talking about every advanced civilization will find out about nuclear fusion because that's the process that generates the energy in the stars. All the stars, everywhere, billions and billions of them. It's not a mass of burning gas. Now, we figured it out in 1938. We set off our first H-bomb in 1952. That didn't take long. And as soon as you have fusion, you have the capability of going to other stars because you can get particles out the back end that have 10 million times as much energy per particle as they can get in a dumb old chemical rocket. Anyway, here's a guy writing in. I think he had a PhD, as a matter of fact. The reason, you know, that's nonsense about fusion. We haven't been able to produce a power plant using nuclear fusion. And I've written a response. And the whole point is there's no connection between fusion for deep space propulsion and fusion for power plant. The example I give, I worked on nuclear fission rockets. Fission is what goes on in those central station power plants, mm-hmm. these huge things. Okay, the fission nuclear rocket engine, the biggest one was built by Los Alamos, less than 8 feet in diameter, but operated at a power level of 4,400 megawatts. That's twice Grand Coulee Dam.
Oh, wow.
Something to compare it to. The exhaust temperature was over 4,000 degrees. It has nothing at all to do with a big fission power plant or a nuclear submarine or those aircraft carrier nuclear propulsion systems. So, you know, it's a dumb comment from a smart person. And there were several others that were inappropriate, let's say.
Yeah.
As you might expect, you know the basic rules, don't bother me with the facts, my mind's made up.
Yeah, we got to change those minds. That's the challenge, right?
What the public doesn't know, I'm not going to tell them. And if you can't attack the data, attack the people. I got attacked for promulgating nonsense for four decades and making a good living at it, too. What can I say? So it's an indication of the ignorance at the higher levels of our society. Partly, I think, because of arrogance. If this were true, I would know about it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, exactly. I'd have taken three courses on it in my third year of college or something like that.
Yeah.
So those problems are still there. And you don't get rid of those very quickly. But I'm still an optimist. And, I have to mention the new explanation for Exeter.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We don't want to forget that because people wonder.
Exeter, as you know, a small town in New Hampshire, famous sighting in 1965, where a couple of police officers and other witnesses observed this very silent, very large, bright red lights on it object over a field just outside Exeter, scared the heck out of the guy at 2:30 in the morning or so. And there's a whole book, Incident at Exeter, and it's discussed in a number of places. Jerry Clark's UFO Encyclopedia has an outstanding article on it. Well, comes the Skeptical Inquirer this month, and they have solved this cold case. Now, knowing the people, you might expect how they solved it by misrepresentation, et cetera. Dr. Joe Nickel of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry and James Magaha, retired Air Force pilot. And they came up with an explanation. They don't know why nobody thought of it before. Of course, people did. A refueling operation, a KC-97 refueling RB-47s. It's not far from Pease Air Force Base. And the trouble is, one of the police officers spent 4 years in the Air Force, including a lot of work on refueling operations. They made a big point of the fact that in the original investigation, it was clear that what was scary was this thing was silent. Now, anybody can tell me that a KC-97 tanker and an RB-47, A, would operate within 200 feet of the ground,
yeah,
refueling in a heavily treed area, would recognize that makes absolutely no sense. B, it couldn't possibly be silent. Especially if you're familiar with airplanes and stuff, at 2 o'clock in the morning, boy,
yeah,
one heck of a lot of noise. And it hung around in a small area, dipping behind the trees and stuff, for about 15 minutes. Now, that is totally out of keeping with a KC-97 and a B-47. So they don't bother to mention that the guy had worked on refueling and give other important data. So this is research by proclamation.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there'll be I understand it's already appeared in several newspapers in New Hampshire.
Oh, God.
You know, so you got to play catch-up with the nonsense.
Right.
I should give you another example. Joe Nickel, who was chairman or was chief investigator for CSI, all his 3 degrees are in English now. He's not a scientist. At the 50th anniversary of Roswell, he was on being interviewed in Los Angeles. I was in Roswell, and we could hear each other. We couldn't see each other. His explanation for Roswell, very straightforward. Some PR guy made up the story to get attention. I immediately said, "You don't know his name, do you?" "Well, no. Well, I've known him for almost 20 years, and the notion that the PR guy of the 509th, the most elite military group in the entire world. I mean, they dropped 2 atom bombs on Japan.
The last thing they want is attention.
Well, and he'd have been in the brig in, you know, two
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it just doesn't work that way. Well, the interesting thing is you fast forward about 9 years, and they had a front page story on the Skeptical Inquirer, Science and UFOs. And there's Joe giving his explanation for Roswell. An unnamed PR person put out an unauthorized press release. Same nonsense. Total nonsense. But don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up. So,
yeah.
And I debated Magaha. He's got his own little observatory down there in Arizona, Air Force pilot. We debated at Middle Tennessee State University. And it's available on DVD from my website, www.stantonfriedman.com. And unfortunately, they didn't take a vote. We had a packed house and a moderator, you know, the whole fancy stuff. But anybody can watch it, and they can tell me who won. And again, it was don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up.
Well, the frustrating part, too, is like, you know, they get on you for, you know, making money off of this or having this as your career or whatever, but, like, you're trying to get to the bottom of this. You're trying to, like, actually solve this mystery. When these other guys, these professional skeptics, they're making a living just outright lying to people. Like, they don't care. That's the scary part, you know? It's like...
That's right.
You know?
And if I'm being complained about because I get paid... Carl Sagan and I were classmates for 3 years at Chicago. He should get a special degree for being so successful at getting high fees for his books
yeah.
and his lectures, much more than mine.
Exactly.
You know, so what's good for the goose is good for the gander or something like that.
exactly, yeah.
You know. Anyway, the world is, you know, it's got its trouble points about ufology, one of them being that the nasty, noisy negativists are really beating on it, not with facts, but with fiction.
There you go. That's a perfect segue, then, to the audience participation part of the annual holiday special, of course, the Ask Stanton Friedman tradition, I guess you could call it now, and we get tons of questions, so
okay.
The general rules apply, you know, only one question. We don't want to hear your UFO story. It's Ask Stanton Friedman, not Tell Stanton Friedman, so we don't want to know about, you know, what you saw and ask, what do you think it was? So that's it, so we'll just dive into the mailbag here.
Okay.
Sagacious asks, he says, there is a disclosure movement which possibly you consider yourself a part of. In any case, how much do you think the government really knows? In particular, do you think that elements in the government have actually communicated with ETs?
Okay, when you say government, that covers how many people work for the government? Well over a million, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Plus the military and all that sort of stuff. So I believe that there is a small group of people within the government which knows a very great deal, and that this is very highly compartmentalized information. They know that aliens are visiting. They've recovered bodies and wreckage. They've learned something from study of the wreckage and study of the tons of data we have, observations by instruments, airplanes chasing UFOs, stuff like that. They know that we've lost at least 7 airplanes, because I've heard 7 stories, of people who were trying to shoot down UFOs, military pilots. The orders were given in 1952, shoot them down if they don't land when instructed to do so.
Yeah.
And an Air Force general admitted that we'd had over 300 scrambles after them. That's a situation we don't know much about, and nobody's ever been told, oh, your son died while chasing a UFO.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. I think they may very well have had communication on sort of a semi-official level. There are 2 stories about President Eisenhower, and if there was one guy you might expect who might have delved into this, I mean, Ike, remember, he had an impossible job after the war. He had to get the Germans and the French and the English and the Americans to work together against the Russians.
Yeah.
But there'd been 2 world wars in which we were beating up on the Germans and they were beating up on us. So to manage to get those guys to work together was an incredible accomplishment, and Ike was very good at that, and he was very security conscious. So, you know, it's possible that they have had direct contact with aliens. But I think that they know a very great deal. What people forget is that the major instrumentation of the government for monitoring the skies, the data's born classified. All those sophisticated radar sets, those spy satellites, the NRO, National Reconnaissance Office, the CIA, the DIA, the NSA, OSI, ONI. These guys collect lots of data, and we don't get access to the great majority of it. So I think they know we're being visited. They know that there's technology beyond our knowledge. They know that there are serious implications. I mean, stop to think about it. Everybody worries about, oh, they're afraid of panic. No, they're afraid of technology breakthrough. Anybody on this planet able to duplicate the flying saucers is going to be 2 legs up, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
Ruling the planet. But also, they know that people in power will lose power if we decide to have a world government. When people start thinking of themselves as earthlings, what does that do to the big shots at the top of all these governments?
Right, right, right.
Who speaks for planet Earth? Oh, we'll hold an election, I had somebody tell me. You're kidding. The Chinese with 1.3 billion, India with 1 billion, the United States with only 310 million. We're going to hold an election? No, we're not.
Yeah, yeah. Probably
so
have a war.
Think, yeah, I think that there are contingency plans, but I think that some few people know a great deal, and the press has been totally inadequate, and it's going after the subject. I mean, look how they bought into the crash test dummies to explain Roswell.
Right, right.
Of dummies. I mean, they weren't dropped until 6 years later. The dummies were all 6 feet tall and 175 pounds and were in Air Force uniforms, for goodness sakes. that wasn't for show. It's because if a pilot gets out of an airplane in a hurry, he's in uniform.
Yeah.
And that affects the drag, the heating, the temperature, all that sort of thing. So it made sense that it would be like that. But none were dropped until 6 years after Roswell. But the New York Times carried it on the front page above the soap fold on a Sunday, mind you. There's no better spot for newspaper coverage than that.
Yeah.
So there's the problem. Yes, I think the government knows a very great deal, and I think anybody who says they don't is being terribly naive.
There you go. Okay. Next one comes from Vale. He asks, well, first he says, the states of Maine and New Hampshire are both rich in UFO sightings and also have high levels of radon, which is the byproduct of decaying uranium or thorium. Do you think this would be a viable way for UFO occupants to refuel their craft on Earth via extraction from water or the environment?
No. No, I don't think they're using uranium and certainly not thorium. Uranium, if you're going to convert that to something you could use, say, in a nuclear-powered airplane, which I've worked on, or a nuclear-powered rocket, you got to get fully enriched, and that's a long, long step from that 0.7% U-235 in normal uranium to 92%.
Yeah.
And so, no, I don't think that's how they work. That's old school.
Yeah, they'd probably have some more advanced way of probably.
Magneto-aerodynamic.
There you go. Mystery Man asks, what is your opinion on the current world economic crisis, and what do you think should be done to fix it? And he also asks if the aliens are behind it. I think he means that jokingly, but...
Well, I hope he means it jokingly. No, I think what's behind it is man's greed. Just reading an article in today's paper here in Fredericton, New Brunswick, that the number of people earning more than $100,000 a year... in the New Brunswick government has doubled in the last 5 years. There's a big gulf between the rich and the poor.
Yeah.
And I think that the laws protect the rich. All those guys in Congress. I mean, do you realize that the congressmen don't have any restriction about insider trading?
Oh,
if you're on a board of a company and stuff, or an officer of a company, there are restrictions about, you know, buying stock because you have inside knowledge before other people do. But Congress, committees voting to do all kinds of things, they don't have any such restriction. Even they know pretty well what's going to be happening, you know. So I think it's greed. I think we've been living beyond our means. Talking today to somebody about, look at the places now where you can retire at age 55. Who's paying the bill? The rest of us.
Yeah, yeah.
And where's the money coming from? You know, too many people on the tap. I think we have demonstrated that we are not willing to look at the planetary system, you know, the whole planet, as opposed to little pockets of rich guys.
Yeah.
And I'm not one of them, so I resent it.
That makes two of us. All right. Hillbilly asks, if this is an interesting question, I thought. If you, Stanton Friedman, were able to ask one person alive in the world today one question about the UFO phenomenon and be guaranteed an honest answer, what would the question be and who would be the person?
I suppose it would be whoever the current head of what used to be MJ-12 was, or one of the original group is all dead, so we can't ask any of them.
Yeah.
And I would ask, what do we know about what plans the aliens have for us? In other words, we fool ourselves sometimes. They obviously haven't destroyed the planet. We've been doing a good job of that, but the aliens have.
Yeah.
You know. But I'm reminded of the turkeys who around November 20th are telling each other, gee, how lucky they are. Their owners, the place is warm. They got all the food, more of the food than they can eat. Isn't it great? And then they get served for Thanksgiving dinner, so that was kind of a hasty judgment.
Yeah.
So I want to know what's in store for us. One of the things that worries me, I believe that from an alien viewpoint, we're a primitive society whose major activity is tribal warfare. And I think they've been terribly patient with us. I mean, there have been 2,000 nuclear warheads exploded on this planet.
Oh, wow.
Only two on people, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But 2,000 altogether. Some of them underground and some of them underwater and some of them up in space. But still, a primitive society, clearly, will spend $1 trillion on things military this year. So I've been rather shocked that their patience, you know, let's wipe the slate clean. I jokingly say maybe this is the devil's island of this corner of the galaxy, and they dumped all the bad boys and girls here.
Yeah.
That's why we're so nasty to each other, and they're going to say, hey, let's start all over again. You know, people forget the Australians take great pride in their ancestors being convicts.
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah.
That surprised me.
Okay. I think that's an interesting answer, and I appreciate that one a lot. The next guy is Locks, and he says he's a former Fredericton resident and a Freedman fan since 1974, so he's a longtime fan of you. He asks, can you spell out some points of agreement and points of difference with Kevin Randall and whether you'd join his recent dream team of Roswell researchers?
You know, I'm interested in the dream team only because I wasn't asked to join. Kevin and I agree that an alien craft was recovered near Roswell in 1947, and that the government knows a great deal that it isn't telling us. We don't agree on many other things. We disagree on MJ-12. Anybody can go to my website, www.stanfriedman.com, and see a long article I wrote responding to his attacks on MJ-12. Am I showing that none of those stand up under careful consideration? We go at things, we're very different personalities. Remember, Kevin has written more than 80 books of fiction. Now, there's nothing wrong with writing fiction. I read a lot of fiction. But it's not good preparation for, you know, careful scientific fact followed by fact kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have found often, and I've commented about them publicly, so there's no secret here, that his reasoning is just flat out wrong, and he changes the past to fit the present, so to speak. Well, I didn't say that. He has his book. I'll show you. We had a discussion down in Roswell, and he goes to the section. I said, Kevin, read it again. You did say that. And he reads it a second. No, I didn't say that. I said, Kevin, it's good English. There's no problem with what you said. Well, that's not what I meant. I said, Kevin, I'm a physicist, not a psychic. I have to go by what you said, not by what you intended.
Yeah.
And so the same thing came up. One of his big argument in his book, Case MJ-12, against the MJ-12 documents was that Admiral, he's called Admiral Hillencoder.
Mm-hmm.
But he was only a vice admiral or a rear admiral, I forget, which doesn't matter. So the document must be a fraud. Later on, when I pointed out that it was standard practice from documents at the Eisenhower Library to use generic ranks, oh, well, that wasn't an important argument. He himself said it was his biggest argument. Now suddenly, oh, well, that doesn't matter. So I have troubles. I don't know how to adjust the past, you know. You look back and you're seeing something different. What can I do?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I probably wouldn't join the dream team. What was it? Groucho Marx once said he wouldn't join any club that would invite him.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. All right. Ik bin Albertijn asks if you could change one thing about ufology without having it fully disclosed, how would you change it and why?
Change one thing?
Yeah, and he says, my apologies if my question doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but I think he means sort of like maybe more funding, more interest from academia, or, you know, better scientific equipment or something like that, you know.
The biggest thing would be to get the media educated. That's where the problem lies.
Okay.
As far as I'm concerned, they've created a totally false picture of what's going on, and they don't have guts enough to dig into it. It's the David Susskind syndrome. I did a television show with David. He was a talk show host way mm-hmm. back in the 70s and got him everything he wanted. And during the taping, between segments, he says, well, I read the New York Times. There's nothing there that says these things are real. So the syndrome goes like this. I'm somebody who takes great pride in keeping up with what's important in the world. And there's no question if aliens were visiting and the government was covering up, that would be important. However, if that was happening, I'd know about it, and I don't, so it must not be, and I'm not going to waste any time finding out about it. So that's why it's important to have the media jump in. And You know, I mentioned those orders about shoot them down in 1952, mm-hmm. military orders. That story was not in the Washington Post or the New York Times. It was in a number of other papers. There's no question the story was there. But why didn't they carry it? I'd like to know.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Yeah, well, you know, it seems like a lot of these places have a vested interest in keeping things the way they are, which is unfortunate.
Arrogance.
Yeah. Ethel asks, what you really think happened in Rendlesham Forest over Christmas and New Year's, 1980/81, and have you ever had the opportunity to visit the site or talk at any length with any of the protagonists, Charles Halt, Larry Warren, Jim Penniston? He's heard you speak fleetingly on the subject in the past, but he'd welcome your take on it, particularly since it's sort of the anniversary.
Yeah, and I've talked to Larry in New York, Peter Robbins. Larry Warren and Peter Robbins. I've talked to Colonel Halt and Penniston and so forth. I haven't actually been at Rendlesham. I have, as a matter of fact, I appeared on a long television program with Colonel Halt, and we've seen each other at conferences, and of course I've seen Peter and the others at conferences mm-hmm. too. I think that an alien craft was there. There were nuclear weapons stored there. I can see why they might be interested. I do not think it was the lighthouse light. And I was involved in a program. Tim Good was there, too, as a matter of fact, in England. And we were talking about the fact that, and Colonel Holt was on the program, that radiation was measured and so forth. And it was amazing how people didn't want to hear about the facts about the case. The opposition didn't. There was sort of a debate. Yeah, I'm satisfied it happened. Does that mean everything everybody has said on the pro side is true? Probably not. But Colonel Halt, after all, is a very respectable military officer who had absolutely nothing to gain, and whose name was put out there only because somebody found it in a document in the U.S., you know, it's a long story. So I think it was an important case because of the official involvement, and we've never seen the backstory. That is to say, what went on afterward, what documents were sent to whom, about what.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know at all. So I think it was a darn good case.
Yeah, yeah. This talk about the nuclear weapons at Rendlesham makes me think of something that goes back to the conversation I had with Mac Maloney about these UFOs in wartime. It's interesting you don't see, you know, you get these countries like Pakistan that has nuclear weapons and stuff, and it's interesting that you see, and you know, stuff like North Korea and Iran, they're sort of on the cusp or whatever. It's surprising you don't see these countries sort of disclose the UFO thing if they get the kind of interaction that these other nuclear countries do. So you wonder,
what do they have to gain?
I guess it's upsetting the apple cart, you know, if you're...
That's right. People in power want to stay in power.
So even if they think that it'll mess up the rest of the world, it'll still mess up them, so they don't want to shoot themselves in the foot.
Well, you know, it is interesting, Bob Hastings with nukes and UFOs.
Yeah.
All these cases, it's kind of nice that we have these examples of them putting a stop. I mean, shutting down 10 Minuteman missiles sure taught somebody a lesson.
Yeah.
And that case where Dr. Jacobs, where they had the new camera and were filming a missile going down the coast of California there, and inadvertently didn't realize until the film was shown, saw this UFO approach the nose cone.
Oh, wow.
Zap it a few times from three different directions and apparently get rid of the weapon. The military must have been really shook up by that.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Pardon the interruption, but I'm Mike Wolf. On just a few more days until Christmas, Tone. You've been naughty or nice?
I'm Tony Kornheiser. I've been Jewish.
Let me sort of ask this one more time.
Right.
Naughty or nice?
It doesn't really matter, does it, if
sure.
I've been naughty or nice?
Sure, because you never know what other presents you might get or be denied.
I've been nice. I've been really, really nice.
Something from Perkins.
You have been naughty. You. There are pictures of you.
It's the Banal of America Audio Holiday Special featuring Stanton Friedman.
Happy holidays.
It's the one night of the year when we all act a little nicer, we smile a little easier, we share a little more. For a couple of hours out of the whole year, we are the people that we always hoped we would be. Have a Merry Christmas, everybody.